Welcome everyone to this first episode of The Secret Life of Zoos, the podcast where we talk about fantastic zookeeper and animal stories that happen behind the scenes. I am Sophie, and today I have the great pleasure to welcome Catherine Stenton, who is a curator of the primate section at Johannesburg Zoo. Catherine, thank you so very much for being with us today.
It's only a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Catherine, you are the head of the primate section, so that covers monkeys and apes. So what are primates exactly? What kind of species do you have here at Johannesburg Zoo?
Okay, we've got quite a lot of different ones. We've got great apes at the moment. We've just got the chimpanzees. We've had gorilla, and we are still looking at getting gorilla again. But we've got lesser apes, which are the gibbons, and we have got lemur species, and we've got monkey species, and we've got baboon species.
And today you have stories to tell us about cron lemurs. So what is a lemur exactly? How would you describe them?
Okay, obviously lemurs are part of the the primate family. They're actually Pomicians. They're one of the oldest of the primate species. And in fact, they differ from a lot of the other primates because they have more dog-like faces. Now, lemurs are found only in Madagascar. And the interesting thing about them is that it looks like they appeared on the island after the island actually broke away from Africa. So they suspect that a lot of the lemur species the initial ones would have come across on vegetation or logs or something like that and arrived at the island. So mainly in Madagascar, you find one or two species in the Comores, yeah. But they suspect that those were probably introduced by humans.
Okay.
So it's pretty much just Madagascar. There are about 110 different lemur species.
That's a lot.
So there are quite a lot of different ones. And it's sort of safe to say that actually the majority are highly endangered.
Yeah.
One of the biggest threats is obviously, the habitat destruction that is happening, on Madagascar at the moment.
Yeah.
So very, very special species, as I said, one of the more sort of, primitive primate species, but they are intelligent. They don't have the same manipulation as a lot of the other primates do with their thumbs and their fingers, because they rely on a lot more, of the smell.
And why do you keep lemurs at Johannesburg Zoo? Is there a special reason behind it?
Well, we've got quite a few species of lemurs at Johannesburg Zoo. We've got the ring-tailed lemur, made famous by Madagascar. And we've got black and white lemurs. We've got some red-bellied lemurs. And we've got the crowned lemurs. The crowned lemurs are particularly special to us because they're one of our most recent acquisitions.
Okay.
So a lot of species of lemurs, because they're so endangered, actually are studbook animals. And studbook animals are part of a species survival plan. They're part of the European ICSI-2 programs as well. And obviously, this is to ensure the biodiversity of genetics of species, to make sure that they, they're represented, the gene pool is as clean as possible. And so we've belonged to some of these stud books for a very, very long time. So we've been keeping lemurs for a very long time. And we've had a crowned lemur, which I think came to us, well, we had two which came to us in about 2004. And subsequently, the female died, and we've kept the male. And he's got other lemur friends that he's lived with. But the stud book have now been able to actually give us a pair of lemurs. We can obviously then represent here in Africa. It is part of the EASA breeding program.
Right.
And obviously, with the stud book, we don't buy the animals. We don't own the animals.
Okay.
It's very much, here's the species. We'll take the recommendations from the stud book, which is to either hold them or to breed with them.
Yes.
And obviously any offspring would then need to be paired with other, genetically compatible species to make sure that we're not inbreeding these animals. This is, sort of part of the conservation that obviously zoos are doing. Very, very important, that we're not inbreeding a lot of the species, that we're not having too many of them as well. It's important to make sure that when we do breed species, that they have other enclosures to go to when they get too big for the group, that we're not inbreeding any of the species, that they're not going into a trade that we don't want them to go into. So, with the crowned lemurs, very exciting because they are a stud book animal. It can be our contribution towards, obviously, protecting this highly endangered, lemur species. And the crowned lemurs, you know, come from quite a small area up in Madagascar. They're actually in the far north of Madagascar. They live in the deciduous and tropical rainforests. Mm-hmm. You know, they have got some protected areas, but not very many. So it's quite vital for a lot of the species, you know, that we do hold them in captivity, that we are ensuring that they are going to survive, and that, you know, with the idea that one day they can be released back into protected areas, you know, and that, you know, they're behaviorally competent, that they're socially competent, you know, that they're as close to the original, you know, animal in the wild. And that is our aim within zoos, to do that. Obviously, a part of, you know, what we do is actually just trying to educate people, to teach people about these animals, being advocates for the species. You know, we try and do fundraising for them. A lot of money that is fundraised within zoos would go towards conservation projects. You know, but obviously we try and do the in situ conservation, but supporting, you know, or we do the ex situ, supporting in situ conservation. Mm. Very important. It is one of the big mandates with zoos at the moment, or at least, you know, zoos that are accredited as good zoos. Now, as Johannesburg Zoo, we fall under PASA, which is the Pan-African Association of Zoos and Aquaria, which in turn falls under the World Zoo Association. Mm-hmm. And there really is a lot of emphasis, you know, on zoos to obviously be doing the right thing, but, you know, doing it for the animals, doing it, you know, for species protection, doing it for conservation, doing it for the education as well. Very, very vital, you know, that we actually showing people what we do. And of course, there is the research side of it as well, you know, what we can learn from these species, because it is the people who are looking after the species that actually will know most about these species.
Of course.
And, you know, it's up to us to obviously record everything in a scientific manner, to actually be scientific about it. And it's all for the future at the end of the day of these species. So the two lemur species, the crowned lemurs that we got, a male and a female, mm-hmm. and they came from Twy Cross Zoo.
Where is that exactly?
So that's in the UK.
Okay.
And so they were sent from there to us.
Okay.
You know, part of the process is obviously acquiring them. You get the stud book approval, and then it's all the permits. Lots of paperwork involved, lots of legislation, making sure that we're complying with everything. Yeah, having gone through the process, which can take like from 6 months to a year, depending on the species, but that's, you know, internationally, obviously importing animals, complying with the relevant, you know, provincial legislation, permits required, you know, the national legislation, permits required. Because they're endangered species. They're CITES species, the Convention of International Trade of Endangered Species. So we've got to get the permits for that as well.
Okay, so there is a whole lot of paperwork involved, because often we get the question, can I keep these animals as pets? And obviously the answer would be, well, no, firstly because of permit requirements. A member of the public is not allowed to keep these animals because they are endangered and permits are only delivered to accredited facilities. But also because there is a lot of special care that comes into the keeping of these animals in captivity. Lemurs are wild animals. It is much more complicated to care for the species than for domestic animals such as a cat or a dog. And seeing that you are a specialist, how do you care for lemurs on a daily basis at the zoo?
You know, for lemurs, and it goes with actually, and I'll talk about the primates, but it goes, you know, for any animal, you know, it's just that there's obviously a lot that goes into it. You've got to know what you're doing. We're obviously specialists, but we're still learning all the time. Obviously, you've got to have your basics. You've got to have your, you know, your food and your shelter and your water and the correct nutrition. But you've got to have a very good understanding of the animal that you're looking after. What are their requirements? Nutrition is really, really important. You know, you've got to know what they're eating in the wild, where they're coming from. And we do have nutritionists on board at the zoo, which work out, you know, the specific dietary requirements of all the animals that we have. And it's very science-based. So, you know, we obviously get to be very careful about, you know, what we feed them. Lemurs in the wild, mainly fruit eaters. They'll eat leaves. Some of them are omnivorous. Some will eat insects, also depending on the time of year.
Right.
The crowned lemurs specifically do like their fruits, but they will eat, obviously, the leaves as well. So we get to make sure that, you know, we have a very good you know, mix of what they're eating. You know, one of the challenges is, say, a fruit eater, oh, that will be easy, feed them fruit. The problem is that a lot of the bush fruits are actually very low in sugar and high in fiber. And of course, the fruits that we have manufactured, that we buy at the marketplace, which is where we get our fruits from, are the exact opposite. They're very high in sugar and not so high in fiber. So we've got to be very careful about, you know, how much fruit that we do give them. Mm. And, you know, that it's not too much. A lot of the primate species can get diabetes, or they just put on weight, and obviously, you know, that's unhealthy. That's mm-hmm. not good for them. So we've got to make sure that, you know, the diet is absolutely mm-hmm. correct, that they're not eating too much of this, not eating too much of that. Special formulated diets are obviously very, very important. Obviously, being able to, you know, look at the animals, that they're not getting too fat, not getting too thin, mm-hmm. that they are healthy. You know, we've obviously got vets on sites. Yeah. We do regular health checks on a lot of the animals. That's really, really important as mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. so that we can pick up any problems or issues that we have. What's important is being able to give them, you know, an environment that suits their needs. And obviously with primates, they're always very sociable species, sociable animals. So they need mates. You can't just have, you know, one on their own. And of course, when it comes to, you know, people trying to keep primates as pets, that's one of the biggest problems, is yeah. that, you know, they end up being on their own, and then their social requirements aren't being met. And that is animal welfare issues. It's not fair on that animal. Mm. They can get very depressed. And even though they might love their human caregiver, yeah. it's impossible to obviously be with, you know, somebody all the time. You know, and then, of course, on top of it is that, you know, a lot of the primates are territorial. So they might like the one person, but other people they might see as a threat.
It looks like a bit like a parrot in a case, right? Very territorial as well.
Absolutely. And so we're going to like one person, but we're not going to like yeah. the next. And then, of course, the biting starts. And especially, and it happens a lot with, you know, any primates in captivity. Mm. The moment there's a sort of, you know, sexual maturity, then they're going to start defending their territory. They're going to, you know, potentially get aggressive. And that is one of the problems. Mm. Again, not necessarily to the primary caregiver, but to, you know, other people. So okay. obviously we get to have our called relationships with our animals. It's important that, you know, they know us, that we know them. Mm. We understand who they are, what their personalities are, that we're not creating anxiety. We're not creating stress. So obviously give them the best, you know, environment possible, mm. You know, which is really, really important. Obviously, it's important, especially within a zoo setup, that animals are given choice. They are given choice, you know, obviously different foods, but they're given choice where they can go. Do they want to see people? Do they not want to see people? Do they want to hide? Do they not? Have they got a safe place to sleep? You know, is it what they would have in the wild? So I think, you know, knowing your species is really, really important so that you can provide what it is that they need, as said, as close as possible to what they are getting. And to just alleviate as much stress as possible. You know, there's a lot more emphasis nowadays on, obviously, animal welfare, and it is important, you know, especially where we've got a lot more people questioning, why are you keeping them in captivity? You know, it's not fair on the animals. But the reality is that we're trying to do is to obviously, you know, be as scientific as possible, but in the best interests of the animals mm. and of obviously the species as well. So you can't just go, you know, we're not going to have zoos and we're not going to keep animals in captivity. What we're doing is that these animals exist. We want to conserve them. We want to make sure that they have the best life possible, that they are, you know, as few animal welfare issues as possible. You know, that they have the best possible care to mitigate, obviously, you know, them being in captivity, which wouldn't it be nice if we could have a world where it wasn't necessary. But the reality is, you know, is that these animals are so highly endangered and threatened in their own environments, you know, that we've mm-hmm. got to actually, you know, be caring for them. And of course, you know, zoos, having been caring for animals for such a long time, are the best people to do that. Because it is about their specific needs, and it is about the animal husbandry, and it is about giving them everything that they need. Mm. You know, what's important is obviously, I mean, we've got the visitors, because we've got to be able to, you know, they've got to be seen as ambassadors for their species, the animals that we have in captivity as well. You know, that people can learn about them and that we can, as scientists, learn about them as well. So that we've got the research, we've got the databases, we actually know how to care for these animals in the best way possible. Because if we weren't able to do it...
Well, no one will.
Actually. No one will, absolutely. You know, we are those people who are doing it, in the best interest of the animals and the species at the end of the day.
Exactly. I see zoos a bit like modern Noah's Arks, because with the state the world is in at the moment, a lot of species are becoming endangered, really endangered, to the point that they will be extinct in the wild within the next 10 years or so. And so in keeping a population of lemurs, for example, in zoos, you actually create a safety net, a population that you can breed and release afterwards into the wild. So like you were saying, this is actually a conservation type of action. And this is why, for me, zoos are modern Noah's Arks.
And the good news is that if each zoo is an ark, yes, then there's quite a lot of them out there, which is important. And, no zoo, at least accredited zoos, are doing it on their own. We're doing it. It is collaboration with other zoos, so it's not just a pair of lemurs, for instance.
This is part of
a greater picture, making sure that each of them have a chance of,
survive in a way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because that's what we need, is more than just the two. We need, a lot more, keeping the genetics diverse, ensuring the long-term survival of these species. And that's, that's the great work, that zoos are doing, and we all do it together. We're not doing it on our own.
It is incredible, this cooperation at an international level between facilities and zoos, just to save species. I just find it fantastic. Any specific stories you have about the little group of lemurs you have here at Joburg Zoo?
We've got three crowned lemurs. The one that we had initially, and the original male that we had, he is 20 years old now.
Yeah.
And he actually lives in a mixed exhibit with other lemurs.
Yeah.
And he has actually a great love affair with a mongoose lemur.
Really?
And a ring-tailed lemur. And it's very sweet. It really, really is. So at least his sort of needs are being met. He's obviously would be too old for breeding purposes anyway.
How old do they get normally in the wild?
So in the wild, you're looking at about like 19, 20 years old.
Okay.
And then in captivity, probably between about 20, 25. You might have, a couple that'll get slightly older than that. But that's the longevity of lemurs in general.
So it's a bit lengthened in captivity actually, right?
It is.
Because of veterinary treatments and all of that?
Veterinary treatments, good health, good nutrition.
Of course.
Obviously, as less stress as possible.
Of course.
So obviously all these things would contribute to that longevity.
Okay.
But like humans as well. If you're getting the medical care, you can actually make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that actually showcases the fact that you are doing the right thing if you can keep the species longer than what they are supposed to be in the wild.
Absolutely. So
that's
our old man. Then we've obviously got the pair that came to us recently. They've only been at the zoo for about 2-3 weeks now.
That's very recent.
So it's very, very recent. So we're still getting to know them and they're getting to know us. I think it's a very different setup from maybe where they were. They've got a lovely big enclosure here. I'm sure they had a very nice enclosure where they were. But obviously one of the differences between Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere is obviously the weather.
Yeah.
So here they're more adapted and suited to the environment.
Mm.
They can go out, especially here in Johannesburg, 24/7, 360 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Which is really, really nice. Mm. Whereas I think a lot of the zoos, Northern Hemisphere, have to have actually larger night room areas.
Yeah.
They've got to control the environment. They've got to control the temperatures. So we're a little bit more, forgiving here, which is really nice. So they've got a really nice outside enclosure. They're living next door to some log gibbons and they're living next door to some other lemur species as well. Mm. And so we're monitoring them very closely and trying to obviously give them a little bit of space, but getting, them to get to know us.
Mm.
So it's difficult to say at the moment how they are. I think they definitely are a lot more relaxed from when they first came. I think they were a bit shell-shocked, but it's like absolutely wonderful to see them gain their confidence and for them to realize that actually it's quite a nice place here and that it's fine and that they are here to stay. This is the permanent, you know, permanent home, we hope. You know, we look forward to seeing, you know, how they're going to change and how, you know, our relationship with them will obviously get better and improve.
At this point, do you know if you're going to breed them or not at all?
Do you know what? For now, it's just for keeping here. Obviously, okay. We adhere to any of the stud book recommendations.
Yeah.
And the stud book is then, obviously, those decisions are made by a stud book keeper.
Yes.
So it's very much looking at the needs of the population as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether or not we need to breed or don't need to breed. And if there's place for them to go if we were to breed.
Okay.
So, you know, we're very much waiting to find out what those recommendations will be from the stud book.
To go back a bit on the primates' life at the zoo, primates for me are a bit like parrots because they need a lot of interaction. And this is why they require toys and something to keep them busy during the day. So how do you cater for that need at the zoo? How do you keep them busy during their day?
So, you know, having mentioned earlier, obviously, you know, they're keeping the environment, which is, you know, optimal to their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, one of the things is keeping them busy. So in the wild, they'd constantly be on the go. They'd constantly be looking for food and, you know, obviously looking out for other animals, whether it's predators, whether, you know, it's looking for prey or, yeah. You know, in their case, looking for, you know, fruit and that kind of thing. So we've got to make sure that we provide enough stimulation for them. And because the primates being very intelligent as well, so we've also got to look at the mental stimulation they need. Obviously, one of the easiest ways of enriching them and keeping them busy is through food, because that is what they would be doing in the wild. Feeding them differently and, you know, do feed scattering so that they spend a lot more time eating.
Scattering. So how do you do that? Different
either on the ground or, you know, in different locations around the enclosure, so that they would have to, you know, move from spot to spot to, you know, instead of just feeding in one central bowl.
That makes sense. So foraging, basically.
Yeah. You know, giving them that opportunity to do that. So that's quite important. You know, obviously, a large part of the enrichment is also social. You know, so either it would be, you know, with keepers and especially with each other, you know, that they're grooming each other, that they're with each other, that they're having, you know, the normal, you know, displaying normal behavior as to what they would be doing. Obviously, because sense is such a big, you know, thing for the lemurs, you know, we could, you know, be putting different scents around enclosures, which would obviously, you know, would keep them very busy, because then they'll scent mark over that. You know, have a good smell. Even sometimes, you know, spraying an enclosure, you know, with water, and they'll then come and they'll want to scent mark over that because, you know, they want to reinforce the smell. So these are a lot of really, really, you know, small but very, you know, important things that, you know, will keep them busy, which is, you know, really, really nice. So we spend a lot of time, obviously, you know, doing enrichments on our animals, making sure that they are busy. And
you can't just leave them in the enclosure like that without giving them anything, of course. So you need to be a bit interactive with them in a way.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, but also designing the right enclosure from the beginning is also so important.
Really?
That they've got enough places to go in the enclosure, that, you know, they've got the ability to move. They've got a platform in the sun, or they've got a tree to hide in, or they can, you know, a nest box somewhere where they can hide away, you know, depending on what they want. So obviously the complexity of the environments is quite important. As long as it's not too stressful, because you know, too much stimulation.
Well,
too much could be, you know, too, could be stressful. So it is finding the balance, you know, with them.
That sounds a bit difficult.
It's not. You know what? Once you know what works, what doesn't work, I mean, we still are learning different things or trying to bring in new stuff. I mean, one of the things is obviously feeding bras daily to them because they leave eaters. So it's going and, you know, so above their diets would include, you know, branches of the leaves that they would have to then eating, or flowers that they can eat.
Oh, flowers too. Nice.
They're actually, funny enough, like lemurs, one of the most important things that they do is actually, you know, pollination of forests.
Oh, right, yes.
And, you know, so it would be pollination and seed dispersal.
Okay, so they're very important to the environment, actually, in the wild.
Absolutely. Okay. You know, obviously because they'll ingest the seeds and then, you know, be able to deposit them, you know, elsewhere. So very, very crucial to the forests where they come from.
I've heard as well there's some seeds that can actually germinate on leaves. They've gone through the esophagus of a certain animal. So they've been actually eaten, ingested, and then deposited somewhere else, basically.
No, absolutely correctly. It won't, you know, germinate otherwise, right. Which is really, really interesting.
So yeah, they are very important to the ecosystem. So it is actually very important as well that we safeguard them, that we keep them in zoos so that we have that sort of safety population if something happens to them in the wild.
Let's hope so. You know, it obviously these things are going to take time. There's no quick fix. We're still desperately trying to, you know, change humans to, you know, start taking better care of the environment, becoming more respectful, you know, recycling, you know, and I think people are, you know, so, but we're not there yet. You know, the big thing is to be able to conserve those forests where they are already and then be able to hopefully, you know, increase those areas.
Yeah.
So that those species, you know, do exist, because that biodiversity is really, really important. Each living being has an important role to play, and we're not even aware of most of them. So we are still learning, you know, the importance of a lot of these species. So, you know, it's important that as many of them survive. So.
And you were talking about education a little earlier. So does having these lemur species actually help teaching people how to preserve the environment around them? Is there an impact on their daily lives once they leave the zoo?
We hope so. We really, really do. Obviously, I mean, there's one of the arguments against zoos always, you know, you can go and see animals in the wild. But the reality is that a lot of people, especially in urban areas, cannot, you know, they're not going to get there and they're not going to see it. So, you know, in order for them to actually make a positive difference, they've got to understand it.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully by what we can showcase within a zoo environment and give the messages and be telling them why. You know, and the importance of it. But, you know, for also people to just appreciate, you know, how absolutely amazing and awesome, you know, the wildlife is, you know, and all these animal species are, you know, that will have an impact. And that is definitely what we're trying to do. And, yeah, I'd like to think so. It's a wonderful thing seeing a lot of, you know, very excited, happy children, because, of course, they are the, you know, the generation that we are aiming towards. Those are the ones we want to change the environment. They're the ones that we want them to stand up and say, right, we're going to care for this environment. We're not going to buy this. We understand the impact of, you know, the decisions that we're making, maybe our spending power, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of changes. You know, each generation does bring a lot of change.
Exactly.
And I think with social media, you know, and the speed at which we can make a change, it shows that there is a lot of hope. There really, really is. So, you know, let's hope for that.
Catherine, thank you very much for being with us today. Thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing on a daily basis with this lemur. Thank you for all the work you do for conservation as well.
No, only a pleasure. And thank you very much. And it's very exciting that what you're doing is getting the message across.
Hoping to, at least.
And finally, thank you very much to everyone who listened to this podcast. And see you soon on The Secret Life of Zoos.